everybody. Welcome to Monday Night, Living Clean and Sober, with Johnny Rags and my co-host, Ken MacDonald.
That's hey, right, Johnny. Brother? That's right, man. Scottish, not Irish, man. That's right.
He's good to be here.
It's been a while, you know.
Glad you're here.
Yeah, me too. Life shows up, you know, keep putting one foot in front of the other. You know, and it's good to be here. Met somebody new from the recovery world.
I like it.
That we all live in, you know, day at a time, just for today.
It's a way of life.
Whatever floats your boat, that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I'm glad to be, you know, not traveling, actually.
It's good to have you here.
Yeah, yeah. So, kind of settling in, looking forward to, you know, continuing to carry this message to someone who's suffering, who wants to dial 10 digits, and I know how hard that is. It's only 10 digits, you know, make a phone call. Why? I mean, they're probably busy.
Yeah, they're very busy.
You know, it's amazing how we talk ourselves out of stuff that's good for us.
Yeah, that's been the thing that's, like, baffled me forever.
Yeah.
That. Why are we... Like, we can have people see us loaded and staggering and making a scene, but when we want to get in recovery, we don't want to tell anybody.
No, I hear you, man.
You know, oh, I'm going to a meeting. Oh, I can't say that. Well, doesn't make any sense. City of Angels. You can go on our website, City of Angels, www.cityofangelsnj.org. See the great stuff we do. It's good to be back. On the show, our Artie is not with us. He's in Cali.
Hey,
enjoying
Artie.
Himself. Hope you're having a great time,
yeah.
Artie.
Grandchildren are great.
Yeah, Steve is here tonight. He's our...
I'm Artie number two.
He's Artie the second, I guess we can call him.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Hi, Art.
Yeah, thanks thanks for showing up.
Yeah.
Got my official City of Angels hat on tonight.
I like that.
Nobody could see me, so I figured I could wear a hat tonight. And we got Mike over here. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hi, thanks for having me out.
Yeah, you're
appreciate
welcome.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. It's great.
It's good to be in service.
If you want to listen, if you want the app on your phone, coaradio.com. And if you want to call in, area code 609-241-7103. Now that I got that out of the way. How is everybody out in Radio Land? Coming to you from beautiful Heightstown, New Jersey.
Yeah, nice quiet place, good location.
Quiet's not good for us.
You know what? I kind of got used to the quiet, you know, kind of just the laid back, doing what we do kind of thing. But you know what I was thinking this morning? I found myself on the phone with someone that was telling me how tough of a time he was having getting clean. And then he proceeded to tell me how he wanted to do it. Can I tell you something? I never got the help I needed by telling, you know, I couldn't make it up. Like people, I had to be led to this program. I never woke up and said, well, you know what? I think I need some help today. And this is how I would like to get the help. I mean, it just never happened that way.
Right.
Yeah, you should never tell help how to help you.
Right. It's just not that kind of animal.
It's not. It's not.
I mean, I'm in that position because I would try to tell everybody else what to do.
So,
and they don't, I guess our friends don't get it, but they'll get here.
Yeah, I know.
Very festive time of year, November. We just had Halloween, right?
Yeah.
We got a big election tomorrow night. That's Kenny's rendition of Halloween since it just passed. Last Monday night was Halloween.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was indisposed, so to speak.
Yes, you were, yes.
The medical... Yeah.
Glad you made it through all that. So, but anyway, Mike, tell us about what's going on.
Yeah, what's going on, Mikey?
Not much. You guys are having me out here tonight, so I didn't really know what to expect, so I'm here to help as much as I can.
We're just having a conversation. Yeah. You know, it was a spiritual invitation having you on, Mike.
Yeah.
You know, we believe that, you know, people that show up here, it's just a conversation. We don't really know who we're talking to.
Yeah.
We don't know who's listening.
Right.
You know, it's sort of like, you know, what are we supposed to do? So what we do is we just, you know, talk about, you know, I guess being in a position to help people with whatever, you know, when we're asked.
Absolutely.
You know, we don't walk around with signs on our back saying, oh, need help, contact me. You know what I mean? It's sort of like not a promotional thing, but, you know, I mean, what do you do, man? How do you...
Well, right now, I work for a treatment facility in New Jersey.
Okay.
It's called Discovery Institute.
Okay.
But I, you know, wasn't always that way. You know, I was led to the rooms by my gift of desperation.
Know,
and for years I went on with that stigma of like, I don't want people to find out, you know, I was an addict and I was using and stuff. Until, you know, I finally just hit.
You kept it a secret, Mike?
I tried to as best I could. Most of my family's members knew about it.
Right.
My parents didn't really know it. They just thought I was suffering from the depression, which I also do, dual diagnosis. But,
I'm a co-occurring
disorder. Yes. Mental health and substance abuse. So, you know, they just figured, you know, I would never do that stuff because my brother, you know, he also suffers from the same stuff. So, that fear alone just kept me sick for so many years,
right.
You know, so I'm a big advocate, you know, I'm a big advocate on, you know, if you're suffering, you know, your family wants you healthy, you know what I mean? Your friends want you healthy and they want you back in your lives, you know, as much as it might hurt to come out and ask for help, you know, it's always there and people want to see you get better. So.
Why does that hurt? I don't
know. Yeah.
What, getting better?
Yeah.
Well, because it's different.
It's change.
You know, we're creatures of habit. We do the same thing day in and day out, whether it's good or whether it's not so good.
Mm-hmm.
We do the same thing, and we expect different results until we realize that we need to do something different. You know, you talked about the gift of desperation. I mean, I remember when I was desperately hopeless, you know, didn't have anything or anyone, and I was totally alone. I was like a sea of isolation.
Mm.
And I was just like, you know, bro, help me out, man. You know, the drugs don't work anymore. I'm tired of telling the family I have a problem, I have to go away. I mean, I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, for real, for real. And that's what it took for me. And then the miracle started happening once I realized that, you know what, maybe there is a shot. You know, maybe I should go away. And those little seeds got planted, you know what I mean?
Well, the scary thing for me was that I had all the support I could ever needed or wanted. I was just too afraid to ask for it. And that's why I like to tell people now, like, surrounded by family, like, you don't have to get to a point where you're, you know, living underneath a bridge or, like, in a car, homeless somewhere before you can ask for help. And there's going to be people there to help you, regardless if your family doesn't want anything to do with you. There's people in, you know, fellowships or whatever, support groups, whatever you choose to do, that will tell you how to get better, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would, while I'm thinking of it, I want to dedicate this show to two people we lost in the last 3 weeks. One of them I sponsored. I had the privilege of sponsoring for a couple years. Johnny McCormick and Molly McGuire. Yeah. Molly, I got her in treatment once or twice. So, but their fight's over. And I want to dedicate this show to them because they were, both of them, a big part of my life. I was looking on some old messages and I saw a message from Johnny. In August, he sent me an inbox, and you know, kind of made me sad because he's gone now. And you know, hopefully they'll find peace, and you know, we'll just keep doing this because of that. You know, I don't know. It's been a long road for all of us, I'm guessing, and you know. I grew up like that too. I mean, I was using early when I was young. And, in high school, I was strung out. And, you know, I went a long time without, I didn't think there was any help.
Mm-hmm.
So ain't nobody I knew was clean.
No, I was one of the first guys from my neighborhood that actually got clean. And I remember how they say, you know, people, places, and things. And I had to go back to these guys and show them how good I was doing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, of course.
You know, like I was really proud of what I was doing. But, You know, I really thought that I could, you know, fight this disease by myself, you know, by just building myself up and, you know, the positive affirmations. And I think all that stuff's good, but you have to really be plugged into this, you know, to this program. And, you know, I talk a lot about vigilance and, you know, it's a daily reprieve. That's all we have. And of course, we're hopeful for tomorrow and next week and next year and all that stuff. But I don't find myself living too much in, you know, the future. I'm really plugged into what's going on right here, right now. You know, letting people know if they made a phone call. You never really know what could happen as a result of making that phone call. There's people that, you know, like back to that guy I was talking about this morning, like, if he said to me once, he said to me 1,000 times on the phone, which was a 20-minute conversation, he must have said to me, I'm ashamed, I'm disappointed in myself, like every other sentence. And I just says, you know what? I says, this is what we do. You know, now that you realized all that, now you can do something different. You should go away. You know, that's what you need to do, because it's hard getting off prescription medication by yourself. You're going to tell yourself, I'm going to wean myself off it. How many times have we done that?
Well,
I'm going to take one less a day.
Yeah, if I'm left accountable to myself and nobody else, then I'm never,
yeah,
I never make the right decision.
I can't tell you how many times I tried to detox off dope and or methadone.
Yeah. You can't fix the problem with the problem.
It was futile. And I thought, well, right, you know, once I get through the first day, I'll be fine. And then, man.
But here's the thing with me. When I would get through maybe 2 or 3 days and I'm starting to feel a little bit better, you know, the mental part would still come back and be like, all right, I feel better now. I can, you know, I can just pick up one.
Well, I couldn't pull 11 o'clock.
You know? Like, well, it wouldn't be out of choice. I usually probably couldn't get my hands on something. And I'd be like, all right, I'm starting to feel better. Normal again. This is what normalcy feels like. And then I'm like, I could take one. You know what I mean? It's just the mental thing, too, people don't realize.
It's the mental obsession.
The mental obsession, yeah.
You can't reason with an obsession.
Yeah.
It's proven.
Yeah.
You know, so the only hope for people like us is to either, you know, detox, because a lot of people have that idea in their head too. Well, I only need a detox, but there's the disease.
It's a good beginning.
Oh, absolutely. You got to do that before you can do anything else. But I mean, the thing is, it goes so deep that we don't realize, we can't fathom that at that point. And that's why, you know, I've been in this business for so long, because I understand that. I recognize that. Mm-hmm. But to get people to buy into that is difficult, or, you know. And you just, it's trial and error and a lot of prayer when I'm working with someone, you know. So that's why you guys are so valuable in my life, because I need you. You know, I don't ever want to think that I could go on about my business and not talk to my friends and people that are in my life. It can't happen.
Right, right.
I get my own ideas after a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, people talk about, you know, not going to meetings. I go to meetings and I'm insane. So imagine if I didn't. I don't even want to try that. I mean, a regular attendance, going to my home group, all that, and I'm still out of my mind. So imagine how it would be if I didn't go. And you lose the connection.
Yeah.
You know? It's not, you know, I wish I could get clean and get better by watching Monday Night Football sitting on the couch, but it just doesn't, it's not that kind of party.
Yeah, well, that would work for a couple of weeks.
Maybe a month.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I used to do stuff like that. You know, it's amazing, like what you were just talking about, how the illusion, you know, we convince ourselves of things that are not true, whether we're doing good or whether we're not doing so good. It's like we can't get away from it.
Exactly.
You know, which, you know.
You're right. Well put.
Yeah, it just brings us back to that point of surrender, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
It's a good place to be, at the bottom rung of the ladder.
Yeah, I don't ever want to get to the top.
No. What is the top?
Lonely.
Well, yeah, there isn't. Separation. A lot of times it's, you know, it's that one thing. I mean, once you get to the top, where you think you should get, this is like how, you know, my addiction works for me. It's like, once you get to that certain level, you might be okay for, you know, be satisfied, you know, quote unquote satisfied for a little while. But then there's other stuff, you know, then there's other levels. And we never get satisfied with just where we're at, you know. And, you know, my sponsor asks me all the time, you know, when I get out of my mind, he's like, so when is enough enough? You know, when are you going to decide that now is enough?
No, I always try to tell that to people, like, right here, right now, in this moment, like, there's nothing better than this. Like, you guys are, you're focusing on what's going to happen, and it's good to have goals and aspire to achieve things, but, like, most
but
of
not
us...
not on your way to detox.
Not on your way to detox, yeah. But, like, most, like, even people in sobriety, like, they're all, like, all right, you're in sober living, you're in a halfway house, you got a bed. I'm like, there's people that have it so much worse than you right now. You know what I mean? And I can relate to being those people, like, one of those people who think like that. Like, I'm not happy with my current situation and all that stuff, because that's how I used to think in active addiction, and that's how I felt, you know, early on in sobriety. But, like, you have to push through that stuff. You have to worry about what you're doing now. You're doing good. You're going to meetings. You know, you have a sponsor, all that stuff. And it'll get better the longer you stay sober, you know. And it's tough, I get, for me, as, you know, being an addict, like, that mentality. But that's something you got to practice in order to really achieve, like, that serenity, to stay in the moment and just be, you know, at peace with yourself and your surroundings, you know. Right. So
plus, it's all geared toward delaying that gratification that we're so used to.
Mm-hmm.
The way I got high, how you administer it, within seconds, you're on.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, now I have to learn how to live my life and be patient.
Right, right.
You know what
Which
I mean?
Which is not like, easy for us.
And then denial comes in, and I, you know, what? There's four of us in this room, and if we all look at the same thing, we're all going to see it in a different way.
That's right.
Which is insane, yeah. But it's all in the perspective.
Well, yeah, my sponsor always, you know, tells me, you know, one of the things that he kind of keeps in mind is the fact that, you know, we look at when things one way, you know, or when there's something coming our way, our perspective is one way. And sometimes you can see it maybe one or two other ways, but you're so convinced. But there's literally like 364 ways that you could look at it. But we focus on that one, and usually it's not the best one. But we're convinced, you know. I don't know how many times I've been convinced that things were going to happen a certain way, and they don't. They don't happen the way that I think they will. And you know, even with the experience of that happening over and over and over again, you know, normal people, you know, learn to trust that and then go with it. I, for some reason, don't. You know, it's like whenever I'm faced with that situation, it's always the same thing. You know,
normal people.
Yeah.
God, I have no concept.
I don't even know if, yeah.
I do not.
That's just the word we use.
Normal, yeah. No. And I can definitely tell, I'm not different, especially with, you know, when I was in active addiction and all that stuff. I had friends who did the same stuff as me. You know what I mean? I had family members who tried the same things as me. They were able to put it down and go about their lives.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I could never do that.
Turn the switch off.
They could turn the switch off, never do it again. You know what I mean? Or casually and... I could never do that for the life of me.
Yeah,
you know, it's just once it was in me, I was like,
yeah.
You know, it's
even now. Like, I'll sit there and I'll grab a bag of cookies. I'm not gonna stop.
Not stopping his cookies.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna tell myself, here's the mental masturbation. I'm gonna tell myself I'm only gonna have four.
Yeah.
And I do that like it's a number that I come up with.
Right.
And I'm only gonna have four. And 18 cookies later, I'm thinking,
when you're going, and you see a food commercial on TV, and it almost wants to make you throw up.
Yeah.
You know, that's the interesting...
Well, that's how subtle of it is.
Yeah. But that's the... You know, what shocks me a lot, or, you know, more and more we're finding out about just how little people know about, you know, because a lot of people that are, you know, like families of addicts, this and that, and even addicts themselves... that, you know, there's in some form of denial. When you put the drug down, you know, you just have an addict that's not using. And anything in it, you know, will take that place. You know, when we, the first few steps that we go through just to admit and then, you know, be okay with it and then, you know, think that there's a better way, you know, there's a vacuum, you know, once you let something out, something's going to come back in there. And if you don't have the information that we have to get sucked back in there, it's just going to be the same old, you know, garbage in, garbage out, you know?
Right.
And like John was saying, like, it doesn't have to be a drug. It could be cookies.
Mm-hmm.
It could be
money.
Money.
It could be women or men for women.
The behavior is exactly the same, you know? And that's what I think some people kind of miss that, because I know I hear a lot about, you know, people in the rooms that will say, well, you know, they talk about how people in their families are like, well, you know, now that you're not using, you know, whatever it is you're using anymore, you should be all right, right? You know? And they don't understand. It's like, no, it's way more than that.
We're still sick.
Yeah.
We are still very sick people.
The drug is the symptom.
The drug is the symptom.
Well, if only it were just the drug.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be? I know, right? Yeah.
Then
all you'd have to do, then just going to a detox would be sufficient.
Yeah, it would be sufficient. You wouldn't need anything after that. You know what I mean? Once it's out of your system. And that's,
again, people that don't see this disease goes to depths that no one could ever understand that doesn't have it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't, like, it's if you tell me, I'm a fireman. I don't know anything about it. I know they put fires out, but I don't know what it involves. Like the fear, all that stuff that goes along with it. I can't feel that because I don't know what it's like. Yeah. I've never walked into a fire. You know what I mean? Same thing. I mean, if you tell me I'm really, you know, feeling this way and this is what's going on, like I scratch my head and go, really? Like, that's not real. To me, might be to you, and all the issues that go with that. That's why the longer the treatment, the better the outcome, because the longer you're involved in that process, the better opportunity you have to get to know yourself a little bit and get the base of what you really need. Because treatment's not going to help you in long-term recovery. We know that. It's just to get you right, to get you started, to be open to this recovery process. Because recovery doesn't start till you get into the steps with a sponsor. Right. I never, you know, had any doubts about that. I don't tell people, you go to rehab, you're going to be great. No, it just doesn't happen like that. You're going to get a shot to be able to examine some of the things that you've done, maybe get some of them bad feelings out, and then, you know, you'll come around and get a new start. If not, it'll kill you. Mm. So what options do you have?
It will.
Really?
It will.
You know what I mean?
But people
have this mentality, and they don't, because they don't know. They don't know about treatment. They're out there in Kensington right now. All they know is the next one, right? That's the mentality of that. But when you remove that, now what do you got? You got somebody who's petrified. I know when I went to treatment, every time I went, I was so scared, but I couldn't tell you that. I buffed up, you know, and I was a little bigger then, you know, and that's what I did because I was so scared. Of what? What was I scared of? Getting better. But I didn't know that I was going to be getting better. I knew maybe I could stop using, but I didn't know the whole dynamics of it. I didn't know there was all that to come. But, and that's why people, and I believe this, like, it used to be that people would just come into the rooms. They didn't go to treat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny that you're saying that because when you were talking, I was thinking, like, you know, I remember when I first got clean and there were so many, you know, unknown things. And I was more afraid of not so much getting clean, but what am I going to do when I get clean? Like, am I going to have to rebuild everything again? And, you know, one of the sayings I hear all the time is, and we have nothing to fear in one of our, you know, readings. And then I always end that with saying fear itself, because I know that's what stopped me from, you know, kind of wanting to get clean. Actually, I was going to switch fellowships and, you know, just because I thought maybe I should hide a little bit. And I was so ashamed and, you know, those feelings had overcome me. to kind of prevent me from coming back to which today is my home, you know, and I don't feel funny saying that. And I remember when I was too cool to say that, you know what I mean? Like, I got it together, you know, things are good. You know, I had the kids and the business and, you know, the house and the cars. And if I want to go out to eat every night of the week, I can, that kind of stuff. And I sort of validated myself with through being that. Able to do mm-hmm. things like mm-hmm. that.
Well, it's like humility plays a big role in that, man. Just being able to admit that, like, you can't handle everything when for so long you felt like that's what you had to do. I agree with you, Ken. Like,
fear. Well, thank you, Steve.
Yeah, no problem. Fear, like, for me, that rings true. Like, it's a fear of fear. You
right.
know, we're obsessed, you know, and it's an obsession with thinking. You know, we're obsessed with thought, you know, and the fear of fear, you know, and that's what's crazy. I mean, and I think when you spend time in recovery, in whatever way it is, you know, you have to give yourself that opportunity to feel and have an experience of, like, hope, you know, to be able to hold on to that. And then, because too many people, like they say, you know, don't leave before the miracle happens. Well, you know, a lot of people think, well, you know, they will get a miracle that occurs to them or it happens to them, but it flies right over their head because they're looking for a miracle, you know, like this big thing that
it's already happened
when it's already mm-hmm. happened. And it's happened. There's been miracles happening in their lives on a daily basis, but it's just, you have to let the clouds kind of get out so that you can see that that's what the miracle is. I mean, it doesn't have to be this huge thing. A miracle is staying clean for an hour, you know.
Well, yeah,
day.
And showing up. And there's a lot of misinformation around here. Just is, you know. And like Steve was talking about, it's yeah, you're looking for the clouds open and the music and all that, but it's right in your midst. And you know, people don't view staying clean as a miracle.
I agree.
Right.
They don't.
Yeah, so
they don't.
It's that whole disease concept that we miss. You know what I mean? Because the disease concept says, all right, if you don't go to meetings, if you don't work the steps, you don't get a sponsor, all that, you're going to die. And that's a fact. That's not a stretch. That's a fact.
Yeah, it's a reality.
Most people don't buy into that. Their mentality is, well, just don't use and go to a meeting and you'll be fine. Not true.
No, it won't happen
Not
to me.
Not true.
But well, a perfect example of, like, you know, what I went through a year ago, you know, clean. Like, I have much more, a lot more respect for the disease of addiction and what it can do even when you're not using. Because I felt like I was going to die. Like, I didn't know how it was going to happen, but everything, my body was reacting, my head, my everything. Because, like, you know, my body doesn't know the difference between whether something's real or not. It reacts, you know. Your nervous system kicks in. And I'm telling you, I'd never been so scared in my whole life. And all I could think about was, like, man, this, I'm not even using, and this is happening. And it just gave me a whole different perspective on, you know, addiction and how powerful it is. Now, that's not to say I may not have been, you know, there were other factors that occurred, you know, but, you know, I truly believe that, like, you know, addiction played the biggest role in that whole thing. I mean, just the belief in what was going on in my head, you know, which 98% of the time is never accurate and it's not based in reality.
It will play tricks on you. You know what I mean? No matter how long you have sober or clean, or it doesn't matter. And the scariest thing I see in the room sometimes is just like to sit down, be quiet, make a meeting. You know, that could have been the scariest, like the most dangerous thing for a person like me, because I needed to go through those experiences, getting a sponsor, doing the step work, to actually have a complete perception change, you know, in my life.
And you're right.
Like, I needed to do that stuff. If I just went to meetings, I didn't get a sponsor. And the scary thing is, there is people out there who have years, multiple years of, you know, clean and sober or whatever, that never got a sponsor. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't know where I'd be if I followed that path today. I'd probably be dead. You know what I mean? I need to do make action happen, like, you know, sit down with a sponsor, get right away.
But you can, you know, I've known people that have stayed clean for over a decade.
Yeah.
But didn't, and you maybe even have had a sponsor, but didn't work the steps.
Yeah.
And they were miserable.
Yeah. See, like, I didn't want that. I wanted to be happy. I was miserable for years.
Right, right. Like, just to be okay. Like, just to be okay. You know, I mean, and just, and everybody kind of looks at you when they say, you know, how you doing? Oh, I'm okay. And they're like, oh, what's the matter? I'm like, no. I'm okay.
It's okay. Yeah,
you don't understand, okay. Man. Okay is
okay
great.
Okay is good.
You know?
Yeah. Okay is good.
So to be okay,
yeah.
You know, it's exaggerated wants and needs. You know,
yeah.
Being okay isn't good enough. I gotta be ecstatic and like high energy, happy all the time, which is
high energy happy is good.
It
it's
is,
good,
but I don't know
usually,
if you can maintain that.
It's
you know?
Pretty hard to do all day,
you'd
every
be
day.
A nut job.
Yeah.
No,
your body really would probably give out. You know, but
well, that's what I wanted so when much. I was using. I wanted that feel good all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's not real.
That's
not
reality.
Real. Yeah. Life isn't like that.
Right.
But I could be okay. See, I learned some things, and one of them is I could be okay not being okay.
Right.
How about that?
Yeah.
That's when
great.
I like when I was not okay, man,
I like
look
that.
Out. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Well,
look
you know,
out.
A lot of the times, like I my experience when I was raising, you know, my daughters, I always got, you know, you hear a lot is about like when we were younger, we felt like, you know, don't cry, you know, don't feel this way. But the fact is that you do feel that way. And then when you're told not to, you know, you know, don't, it's very confusing. And you start to feel like not feeling okay, there's something wrong with you. It starts there, you know? And then there's that fear of like, oh my God, I don't feel right, so something's wrong. But the fact is, like, living as a human being, you know, you're not gonna feel okay sometimes. You're just not. And there's no reason to overreact to that. But as an addict, oh my God, I don't feel good. So what do I got to do to fix it?
Right.
What do I got to do to fix it?
Yeah.
Well, that's what the first thing we do.
You
got to
go through
something.
It, man. You know?
Oh, this is doesn't feel good. It's got to go.
Yeah.
How am I going to get rid of this?
Right.
I know. I'll eat them cookies I was just told.
Yeah.
Or
I'll go spend $100, $200 that I don't have.
12 hours of football. So I don't have to feel nothing or deal with it.
But the best thing anyone could say to you is, like, me too. You were talking about emotions and feelings and stuff. And, like, when someone says me too, yeah, I feel like that too sometimes.
Relatability.
You know what I mean? You can relate to someone else in the rooms. You know what I mean? We're going to feel all different types of ways. Happy, sad, joyous, free, you know, sad. I mean, that's normal for any human being. It's like you're going to feel those emotions. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you're okay at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well,
you know?
Normal people or whatever you want to call them have the right. Like, say a lawyer has a bad day in court. Comes home, opens a bottle of wine, has about three sips, and he's done.
Mm-hmm.
But he has that right. He's not going to hold his mom, a knife to his mom's throat, threatening her if she doesn't give him money. That's not going to affect him.
No, it's not. No.
He might get a headache from drinking the wine.
Yeah.
But they have the right to do that. I lost that right a long time ago because I can't use what I used to feel good. And that's all it really was. It did a couple things. One, I was scared and petrified of life, and it took that away. So I felt good when I was using it. It was the solution, really, if you think about
it.
My solution was getting high. It fixed everything. But it got to the point in my life where it didn't fix anything. It made everything, it magnified everything 10 times worse. Then there's no going back from there. You're never going to get that. It takes everything away again. Once you get to that point, it's over. You might use another 10 years, but it's over at that point. And it was over for me for a long time before I stopped using.
Yeah, the party was over way before I stopped. And
you know?
One thing that, you know, emotions and feelings never killed anybody. You know, you can't die from having a feeling.
Did
you
ever go to Kensington and cop feelings? Hey, give me love and hate
right
there.
Yeah.
No, I'm copping dope.
Give me some gratitude over there. Yeah. That
doesn't. Our first reaction, of course, is always to fix it because it doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
But what I learned instead of trying to fix it is identify it. What am I feeling? Okay. Feeling a little disappointed. Okay, that's cool. I like doing that.
Yeah.
disappointed is okay.
And it's okay to feel that. That's the thing. You know, and like I said, I was raising my daughters, and even today, like, you know, one's 21, one's almost 18. When they get, you know, and they're girls, so they can be, you know, slightly emotional, you know. But I always make sure that I tell them, it's like, it's okay to feel the way you're feeling. Because they always say, man, you know, like, something's wrong with me. I shouldn't feel this way. Or, you know what I'm saying? And I've never really taught them to do that. Like, they came to that conclusion on their own somehow. Because I made it a point, because I was in recovery for the majority of, you know, they were a little too young to see, you know, the damage that was done. But I know that I distinctly, like, on purpose, never tried to tell them that how they felt was wrong, right, or indifferent. It was just, it's okay. You know, when I was a kid, you know, when I felt some kind of way or I was sad or, you know, it's like, what's wrong with you? That was what I was saying. What's wrong with you? I'm like, I don't know. You know, it was never said, well, you know, it's okay to feel that way, you know, and it is.
No one ever told me that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll give you something to cry about.
They tell you how to feel. Yeah. Here's how you are going to feel. Yeah. And I'm like,
and they
but
I don't
feel that way. And then you would get in trouble because you wouldn't, like, automatically change your feelings, and you can't do that. You know, I mean, you can make a choice to feel differently about it, you know, like you said, analyze it. Like, it's, dude, I just feel sad. And then what we try and do is we try to stop it somehow, or we try to stuff it. And the thing is, you've got to feel it. You've just got to go through it, and it'll go away. It just, right. It always does, you know, always has for me. I don't know if anybody that said that they permanently stayed the way they felt, you know, and it just, I don't think it's possible.
I've never heard anybody say, man, I was sad today, and I'm so grateful. And I never heard anybody say that. I mean, I'm grateful for being able to feel that. I don't like how it feels.
Right. Yeah, there's a difference. Yeah, like, you don't want to live in it.
Right. My mother's death, like, it's a sad thing. I miss her, you know?
Yeah.
But it's sad. So it was okay for me to feel sad that she passed. And that's cool. Like, that's the stuff that I shut down when I was 6 years old. I shut down.
That's what happens, man. Yeah.
Didn't pay attention to how I felt. Just went right along, real numb, until I found a substance to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, I used other things. The manipulation, the con game, you know, all that. But it's the whole behavior dynamics that enter into why we need the steps, because it's behavior modification doesn't work.
Right.
There's no, okay, just curtail that for a little bit. No, that no. Doesn't work for addicts. You know, it just doesn't
curtail.
Happen.
That's a good word.
You know? Yeah. Curtail means manage.
Yeah.
Curtail means to.
It would mean to, well, curtail would mean, yeah, just to kind of hold off for a moment, but that doesn't ever. When you say hold off, that means at some point you're going to continue doing what you were doing.
Right, yeah. Let it be lessened.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah, lessened. Yeah. There is no less.
No. There is more with less.
Yeah. I know I needed my mind to focus on something else other than me all the time. You know what I mean? That's what I was taught in treatment and then continuously afterwards in meetings and stuff. Like, I needed to focus myself, which is, you know, my God, my higher power. You know what I mean? Today, like, I needed to do that in order for me to stay, you know, happy, joyous, and free. Yeah. You know, like I said, not all the time, but like I needed my mind to go somewhere else.
That stuff works.
You know? Yeah, it works.
Because I remember I went to see a guy, sponsored a guy that was HIV positive, and he was real sick. And this was back in the late 80s, all right? So I had a pack of problems that night. But the thing is, you go away from the problems because the more you think about them, the bigger they get. Hmm. So the solution now becomes direct ourselves away from ourselves and on to someone else. Now, he certainly needed me more than I needed him. But what he did for me that night was, and he'll never know it because he passed shortly after that, but he probably saved my life, or probably saved days or hours or weeks of miserable, you know. But when you learn how to do that stuff, that's why they say you can't keep it unless you give it away. When I'm sitting with the sponsee, I'm not thinking, oh, I got a mortgage payment, you know, this is going on, I'm not liking that, work slow, blah, 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 all that. I'm not thinking of that. I'm thinking about helping this guy get better and answering his questions. And not thinking about myself for however long we're sitting there, 2 hours, 4 hours, half hour, no matter what it is. So that's the secret around here. Nobody, we say it all the time, but do people really buy in that I...
Well, it's not that it's not a secret unless you've experienced it yourself. You know what I mean? Unless you actually take the necessary steps to reach your hand out and offer help to someone else, you're not going to know what that feels like.
Exactly. Right? You know, and, same thing. You know? Like you don't know what it feels like to be clean and in recovery because you're not. So you can't know what that's like.
Yeah.
Like we started at the outset of the show, we started talking about that, and that's true. I can't feel that. I don't know what it feels like. Like, I don't know what it feels like to be an undertaker, you know, which I'm sure has a lot of big stuff that you have to deal with. You know, you're dealing with people who are no longer here. So I know for me, that would be an issue.
And then the people that are...
I don't know
still,
where that came from, but...
Their families that are still here that you have to deal with. They deal with the families that are
families
dealing with that.
And we get the families, hopefully, before the kids need that.
Absolutely. Hopefully, you know, but at this rate, it's just the kids are getting younger and younger, it seems, that are passing. And
it's cheaper and cheaper.
It's cheaper and it's more potent. It's more powerful stuff that's out there. And
plus,
it's
you
scary.
Don't know what they're putting.
You don't know what they're putting in there.
Back when we were shooting dope long, long time ago, every once in a while you would hear somebody got battery acid or rat poison.
Yep.
You don't hear that anymore. You hear, oh, what was it? Oh, the fentanyl.
Carfentanil. Yeah. You know,
yeah, well, it's all these man-made, you know...
It's
synthetic heroin.
Yeah,
that's what it is, synthetic
and
heroin.
And you don't know what you're... And that's why the newest problem coming out of this is Narcan isn't working.
It's not going to work
because it's
for
not
that.
Dope.
Yeah.
You know, you're thinking you're copping dope, but you're not.
Right.
Like, they got this SW-18 from China. This much kills you.
That's what amazes me,
insane.
Too, is that the
and
the
it's not even dope. It's not even heroin.
Not, yeah.
The minuscule amount of a certain substance, especially if it's synthetic, and what that can do, I mean, that blows me away, what it can do to your body, what it can do to your head. And just that much. I mean, that's... it's scary. You know, it's scary that, you know, because basically, like, all we are is this... We're a big chemistry set, you know, our bodies, and we're just... You know, once you introduce something like that, you have no idea how your body's going to react to that, you know? And you're right, man. The stuff, like, they're just, it won't react, like you said, to Narcan, you know, in a positive way. So now we're going to have to figure something else out, you know? But in the meantime, people are going to die.
And for any normal people out there listening, that's the insanity of this thing is we don't care if there's anything in there. We just want to feel better right now instantly.
Right.
And it's something normal people, non-addicts, will never understand is that we're willing to take that risk.
Yeah,
carfentanil.
Right?
We don't
ask you what it is before we take it.
Yeah.
You know,
and then,
we just take it and go, what was that?
And then we'll come in and have trust issues.
Yeah, that's...
I said to a guy one time, I said, you got trust issues, huh? I said, when you cop, now this was a dope fiend, all right?
Yeah.
A street, straight up dope fiend like myself.
Yeah.
I said, well, when you copped and you went down the way and you got a bundle or whatever you got, did you put it under a microscope and make sure you saw what it was before you...
Take it to a chemist?
Shot it in your veins? I said, well, no, I didn't do, you know, no shit like that. I said, I know you didn't. You trusted the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The same way that guy delivered your medicine is the same way we're going to try and deliver a solution to you to make you feel better, you know, hopefully.
Yeah.
You know,
good point.
Life, you know what I mean? Like,
we get a million excuses as to why we can't get better.
Right.
We try to disqualify ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know you and you could get better, but not me. Ain't going to happen for me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm the worst dope fiend that you could ever meet, you know.
There's so many degrees of separation.
We
exaggerate our own self-importance. We're just a little like this.
Yeah.
In the universe.
That's it. It's all
good. And anything that goes that goes on in our lives, like, you know, at any given moment is a blip on the radar. Like, it won't matter 6 days, 6 months, a year from now, you know? I can't remember. Last week, I'm sure I was probably freaking out over something. And at that moment when I was going through it, it was the only thing that was going on. But here I am now, and I couldn't tell you. Yeah. It's almost like, why do you put yourself through that? You know what I'm saying? And I had a guy that I used to meditate with. I haven't been back there in a while. And he would ask, you know, he's like, you know, so what's the problem, you know? And I, well, you know, like John said, well, you go through your head. It's like, oh, well, you know, I got this issue going on at work. And he's like, all right, well, is that happening now? No. Yeah, I got a mortgage payment. I got a car. Is that happening right now? No. And what's the problem? None of the stuff that goes on in my head, except for what we're doing at this very moment, is happening. This is what's happening. You know, and to be able to grasp onto that and stick with it, you know, you won't always be able to do that. You may stray away from that 1,000 times. Just always bring yourself back. You know, being in the moment, like my sponsor says, is when that's when he's closest to his higher powers, when he's in the moment.
Absolutely.
You know? I agree.
Because anytime you're not, you're in your head.
That's a dangerous place to be.
Which is, you know, do not go in without adult supervision.
Yeah, it's like being dark behind enemy lines. I get it.
There's a really good book for staying in the moment. I recommend it to everybody. It's called The Power of Now. It's by Eckhart Tolle, and it's a great read.
He's got a couple good books out. Yes. That guy was a nutcase.
Yeah, he stayed homeless for 2 years just to stay in the moment. Yeah. Like, he lived on a park bench for 2 years. Yeah. Just to stay in the moment as much as he could.
And he's this little, like, unassuming German guy with a weird accent and a weird laugh, if you hear him, because I've heard him do. But, man, he comes out with stuff that is, you're just like.
It helped open my mind to new things.
Yeah. You know, like, it's weird.
I read that book, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And as soon as I finished it, I got a call from the convention. And what do you think the topic was? Living in the now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. See that?
There are no coincidences.
That's a tough topic.
It is.
What?
It is.
They sent you the book.
Yeah, yeah. So, Mr. McDonald, what do we got for our word for the week, which is our next segment?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, like, there's nothing like the present, you know, so.
That's why they call it the present.
Well, because it's precious, the present. I read that book, too. Mm. There is a book written that. It's called The Precious Present. Mm.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so it's very, very easy reading, like sort of like Dr. Seuss kind of stuff. Yeah.
We usually give Ken an intro for his word for the week.
Yeah,
but Artie isn't with us tonight. Yeah.
You know what? I was thinking about a few things, and, you know, it's actually a luxury to think about, you know, good things. But I was thinking about spiritual contentment. Mm. And it's a mental or emotional state of satisfaction, maybe drawn from being at ease in one situation, body and mind. Mm. It could be a state of having accepted one's situation and is a milder and more tentative form of happiness, actually. So sometimes, you know, people think that contentment is a bad thing. Sort of like contentment, complacent, you know, that kind of stuff. But according to the dictionary meaning of contentment, it's a pretty good place to be, actually, because...
I always like contentment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about anyone else. I mean, it's always been hard for me to be at ease.
Yeah, well, that's why...
We
have a dis-ease.
I always thought I had to be doing something different. I had to make things happen.
Yeah.
You know, I can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how I was brought up. You know what I mean? You can do it. Try harder. Oh. Yeah. I've been fucking trying hard. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how can I try harder than I've already been? I didn't understand that.
Yeah, like, and
why are you crying? I don't know. I'm just crying. Just like, do I need a reason?
Well, and also, like, just to be able to, like...
They would give you a reason.
They would give me a reason. Why don't you be a man? Oh, okay, I'm not a man because I'm crying? Yeah. I mean, come on.
Well, also to be able to, like change your direction without feeling fear of that. You know what I'm saying? Like, from an outside, like, you know, being, like you were talking about, being content. And I heard somebody, there's a friend of mine that, you know, like, spiritual buoyancy, you know? Just being able to be content and... We get so stuck in, you know, you were saying something about changing, like, you know, and being able to change without being almost like, you know, I remember when, you know, when you want to make a decision, we don't make too many decisions in our lives during the day. It's on rare occasions where we make decisions that seriously impact our life.
Right.
I mean, everyday basis decisions, man, you know, I'm going to take a left here. I got to, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, you know what? I made a pretty good decision yesterday not to watch the Eagles.
Oh, that's a great decision.
Yeah. I'm thinking that was a good decision. I mean, I'm homegrown Philadelphian. But I kind of saw some things happening. And don't get me wrong, I was rooting. I just wasn't in front of the TV rooting.
They could have won the game.
You know,
That's what makes it hard, because they could have won the game.
I choose not to participate in it.
I know. It's like, hey, you know, I mean, sometimes we make good decisions and...
Sometimes we don't.
Well, what happens when you consistently make bad decisions? Like, let's take, for instance, Doug Peterson or Chip Kelly, for that matter. What happened when he consistently made bad decisions?
Bad things happened.
What did they do to him?
He got fired.
They got rid of him.
Yeah.
They
fired him. Well, that was my life. I consistently made bad decisions.
Right.
So I fired myself as manager of my life and got God into my life to manage me.
I like that analogy.
That is. Hey, look, I live my life. The less I do, the more I got. I'm better off keeping my opinion to myself, because it's usually self-centered. It's usually
ego-driven.
Hurtful. Mm. You know, the delivery is always, you know, not well received. So the less I do, the better off I am, you know. And that's not to say that I don't speak my mind. I mean, I have things that I believe in, and when I'm asked, I talk about them. Mm.
Say what you mean. Mean what you say, don't say it mean.
You know what? No, the in-between of doing that, too, is being able to do it when no one else is looking. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you really do?
And try not to, you know.
It's easy to be on your best behavior here and now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really easy to do it. You know, or it's real easy to do it an hour a week or an hour a day at a meeting. It's easy to do it. So, I mean, this lifestyle has to become something that we want to live. Mm-hmm. But we have to understand that it's worth living, so we have to trust in something to make that happen. And that's a hard thing to do. Look, I get it. I didn't wake up saying, oh, yeah, I'm getting clean today. Oh, really? Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't make that decision, really. That decision was kind of made for me. You know, by whatever moment of clarity that it was, that just I said, okay. You know, it was surrender, really. It's like, look, I can't do this anymore. And right when you say that, you know, I mean, that just... And if you take you out of the equation, if I took myself out of the equation, it allowed me to get the help that I needed.
Well, how many people have said that? I can't live like this anymore. And they continue to live like this.
Billions.
And then you have an answer for them. I mean, you just say, look, here's a solution that's worked for millions of people. It's probably more successful than any medication given to anyone for anything, right? Yet it's like the hardest to get people to buy into and actually, you know, utilize. It's kind of, it's ironic.
I hate seeing that, the bashing on, 12-step fellowships, you know, versus, you know, maintenance treatment programs, MATs and all that stuff. Like, 12-step fellowship programs work 100% of the time if you do them correctly and to the full extent of what is asked of you. There's such a low success rate, it seems, because people stop doing the necessary things. They're too scared. They don't, you know what I mean? They don't take the proper guidance.
Yeah.
And,
numerous factors. You're not willing.
Yeah, you're not willing. You're not open.
You're not open-minded.
And you're not living honestly. You're not being honest in all your affairs. And normal people don't understand that. So they criticize 12-step fellowships, NAAA, all that stuff, because they see people relapsing over and over again. But what I see is, like, from first experience, if I do this stuff, you know, I can't fail. That's how I look at it. If I truly buy into this stuff, if I continue to help others, if I keep God first, you know, my higher power, then I cannot fail.
Yeah.
And that's what it tells me in that book I read. Yeah. That's what it tells me.
You know, sure, it's a fact. I mean, not everything works. I mean, and people may, you know, you can say what you want to say about 12-step programs and people relapse all the time. And I don't want to say I don't care about that, because I do. I don't want to see anybody relapse. But for me personally, I can't let that affect my decision. You know, I haven't let that affect my decision. Yeah. on whether to participate in this program or not. I know that it's worked for people. I know that it doesn't work for people. But most of the time when people end up relapsing is because they've fallen short in some way.
In some area. Either it was they stopped going to meetings, they stopped praying, they stopped reaching out their hands to newcomers.
The program isn't the problem, you know. And the thing is about the program, I mean, it's they haven't changed like the literature in so long.
Years.
Like they haven't had to amend it or update it really in any way because it's worked as is for 50 plus years.
Well, that's another part of the misinformation. You know, I'll be joking with somebody. They'll say, well, it's an honest program. I'll say, yeah, honest program. Mm-hmm. Not honest people.
Right.
It's an honest program.
Yeah.
Everything
about
this
program.
You've got
to be honest with yourself first.
Works.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you utilize mm-hmm. it. Like, I saw something that you're talking about, Mikey, the med-assisted treatment. Mm-hmm. And they were making their case based on the poor results that the fellowships bring. Mm. And you know what? Like, that's what they have to do to be able, because there's money involved.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
There's no money involved in a 12-step fellowship.
No.
So,
of course they're going to look, you know.
And like you said, Steve, it works for me. I don't have to prove anything to anybody. I'm not going to be an advocate for a 12-step program. I know what it's done in my life and the lives of people around me. So I don't have to prove anything.
You know, it's proof enough is showing up for family events, being there for
exactly.
if you have kids.
It's my fam.
It's proof How enough. We don't have. It's attraction. That's why I say attraction, not promotion.
Right.
Like we're living
right.
proof that this stuff is working
exactly.
for people that does have a success rate. You know what I mean?
To me, I have my own opinions about.
Yeah, and that's
you know medication assisted treatment.
Yeah,
and like you said at dinner, yeah, it saves people's lives, but.
It's about quality of life, too.
Yeah,
though,
it didn't work for me, MAT. Right. I tried it. It didn't work for me. I tried to keep it on a low, like, went to an outpatient doctor. It just didn't work for me, so...
According to my version of MAT, it's 150 milligrams of methadone, and I'm sleeping 23 hours.
Yeah, that's...
And throw on top of some benzos. That's med-assisted treatment for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, like, we also talked about,
I mean?
Like, it's recovery right now is right in the spotlight. It's bigger than it's ever been because it's in the suburbs. So they're looking towards MATs as harm reduction. It's, you know, it's helping save lives at the moment. And I always
it's a stopgap measure.
What's that?
Is
yeah,
what that is
exactly. And then for me, it's just you know, I'm all for saving lives and whatever you need to do. But eventually, you have to come off that. And like me myself, I couldn't trust myself to not substitute my drug of choice with the MAT. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just couldn't do it. I wasn't strong enough. If that's going to help save your life, awesome. But, like, I found something where I don't have to put anything inside my body at any given time,
right.
you know, to feel the way I feel. You know, and that's free. You know, that's freedom to me.
Yeah.
You know, I never thought that could be.
The old
you know?
Misnomer is, I could hang out with them because that wasn't my drug of choice. Mm. I love that one.
It'll be your drug of choice real quick, man.
Yeah, like you couldn't, like, just because you're a dope fiend, you couldn't smoke, pick up and smoke crack.
Yeah. Right.
It's like... If I tell you how many people that I met in recovery and eventually went out and used, and the first time they had ever shot dope was after they'd been to meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So that's the other side of that coin, you know. So there's a lot of stuff that you hear, and I used to think that everything everybody ever said in a meeting had to be true, and it's not.
It's not.
Bullshit.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, right? like... Again, I tell my daughters this. It's like, I am responsible for my decisions and behavior. At the end of the day, I mean, if I make a decision, I made the decision, you know? It just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, you know, sure, there are certain factors in my life, environmentally, my parents, whatever situation is that put me on the course that I was on that led me to here, you know? But once I stopped using and became honest with myself, you know, and accepted responsibility for me, right? I can't blame you or anybody for what I'm going to do in the next 6 hours. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and it's about, like, taking responsibility for yourself, man. And, I mean, it just, a lot of people that don't succeed in a 12-step program are not willing to do that, you know?
That's right.
You know, they're just not willing to take responsibility for it. You know, it's very easy to just, well, you know, come up with an excuse.
We keep what we have only with vigilance.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't know. A lot of people are starting younger now, and you see them coming in the rooms, like they're like mid-20s, and they've been using since they were 13. They don't know what it is to be responsible. They don't know what it is to be adults. So like when you come up and you're like, all right, you got to start paying rent, you got to pay for, you know, that's hard. That. You have to learn that, but you learn that in the rooms. You learn to become, you know, a responsible adult if you stay.
Because no one else has it.
If you make it here.
Yeah. If you make it here. Yeah.
People would tell me, oh, leave him alone. He's young. I said, listen, the disease will take him out just like it'll take out somebody who's 40 years old.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So the same applies to them.
Yeah.
Well, there's been
whether they're young or not, and I applaud that because it's a great thing. But don't make them different because they're young.
No,
it's, they have the disease. They have the disease.
Yeah, because they could be dead tonight.
Kill them just like the disease doesn't care whether you have it or not. No, you know, whether you think you have it or not. You know, hey, there was a stat real quick that we went to a seminar. You know, like a week long thing, and they said that people that aren't involved in recovery that just live a life like that would. You would think normally that, you know, their average of success goes up on a straight line. People that are addicts that get into recovery actually succeed higher. Statistically speaking, it's a proven fact that they actually go beyond because they, they're addicts and they got clean and got involved in a program of recovery in some way and actually got, you know, did even better. Than had they not been addicts and just went the normal course.
You know why I feel like that is? Because like in recovery, if you utilize the program, like it gives you a sense of purpose.
Right.
There's so many people out there just wandering around. A lot of them don't know what a purpose is or what their purpose is. And it's hard for us to even realize that.
May not even be addicts.
They're not, not addicts. Like they're just wandering around and you know, a lot of them, it's terms of like monetary value. Like that's how they choose their success.
It's what they learned at home. Yeah. Like the educational system doesn't teach you. Like it's about tests and like, you got to do well on this, but it doesn't give you, you know, school doesn't give you, they try and maybe they will, you know, it'll get better, but the encouragement, it's coping skills. I don't know where you learn them. Like, you know, I don't know if there, you know, there's a class for coping skills, but if you grow up in, you know, if you're a kid and you have, you know, parents that are say in a recovery that have utilized the program, I bet you find that like kids that grew up in that atmosphere are a little bit better off at coping with things, you know? Understanding that, like, oh, well, you know, right now it's an S show, but it'll be okay, you know?
Yep.
Well, we've come to that point.
Boy, that ended quick.
That was quick, wasn't it?
Wow.
God. Thank you, guys.
Things fly when you're having fun.
That's right.
Just flowing.
Mm-hmm.
I get it, man. A couple good guests on next week, too, right?
Yeah.
Like Mike and a few other people got bigger and better every week. Every week we got to
forward. Be sure to join us. Thanks, Ken MacDonald.
Yeah, good to be here. Yeah, I'm a little sleepy right now.
Yeah, I can tell.
Yeah.
Steve, thank you. Great job. Yeah. Mike, thanks for being
on
the show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me out, guys.
We'd love you to come back.
Absolutely. Yep.
Great show.
Yeah. Yeah, wish you the
best. Nice to meet you guys.
And thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next week. Until then, be well. Artie usually does the...
Like a sound effect?
Yeah, I know.
How come you don't have that, Steve?
I don't know. I don't have the app, apparently.
You should have gave it to you before. Are we off now?
Yeah.
Okay. It's okay to talk.
It's safe to talk.
Good job.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I see that anytime, man.
No,
I get passionate about certain topics. So.
That was a great